All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very special guest. Dude, I literally found you on the Discovery page. You were doing like a bunch of switch kicks and shit, and you generated, I mean, for people that don't know Muay Thai, you can generate just an inordinate amount of power, right? So I was like, dude, I have to get this guy the program and own your topic. Dude, thank you so much for hopping on, man. This is great.
You got it, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, bro. So you're out in Bangkok, right? You train out of PK Sanchai Gym out in Bangkok, right?
Yeah.
And out there, for people who don't know, you know, for Muay Thai, dude, I was born in 97. So the UFC was only, you know, 4 years old at the time. And then when I started getting into it, it was with Anderson Silva, right? And my conventional wisdom from what people have told me is, oh, you need to have, you know, ground fighting, and you need to have wrestling. And dude, the R8 limbs of Muay Thai, dude, he was knocking motherfuckers out left and right. And he went on, like, you know, with Chris Lieben, and he choked out Henderson. And dude, he went on this like unprecedented run. And I think that a lot more people, they focus on jiu-jitsu, right? They focus on all these other things. But dude, Muay Thai, and for me, it's more fun. You know what I mean? Using, you know, it's just a lot better. You get what I'm saying? So I think,
yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's why I chose this sport, because it's always on your legs, you know, and you're always having to fight. Whereas in jiu-jitsu, you can kind of, I don't want to say take a break, but it's a whole different, you know, like a sport when you take it to the ground, and then you can, you can take breaks. You know, there's different strategies you can do. So that's, you know, that's like a way out. But for Muay Thai, it's stand your
feet. Yeah, it's crazy. And it's one of these things too, man, where, you know, when, because I know you fought in February, right, of this year. Yeah. So how has it been trying to get a new fight with COVID and shit? Like, how are the regulations? Because I guess, for one, you know, they don't have fans there, right? Because I know the UFC, they don't have fans there. They're in a Fight Island, right?
Yeah. And
is it the same kind of protocol where you have to wait for the commission to sanction some sort of fans, or just like go by location? Like, I'm not really sure about that.
Yeah, you just have to. You're basically just following the guidelines of the state or the country. So, and obviously right now, every country is following the same guidelines, which, you know, there's a limited amount of people that you can let in into a venue. In Thailand, although right now I'm in New Jersey, in Thailand, they're starting to let people back in, but it's not up to the same amount, and the capacity is not the same. But it's slowly getting back to how it was before the pandemic. So yeah, in February I fought in Thailand, and then I was supposed to have one more fight in March, and then, you know, everything started happening then, and I had to come back home, and I've been home since March, basically. And I told my coaches, you know, before I left, I said to them, yeah, I'll be back in June, but that obviously didn't happen. They're not letting anybody into the country right now. So I'm just waiting to get a visa, some kind of visa to get back in. And hopefully I'll be back to Thailand in January.
There you go. Yeah, I can imagine too. Like, I've never had any amateur fight, let alone a professional one. But the fans, whether they're for you or against you, it's like just getting that energy just to pump you up. Like, because I was watching – did you watch Khabib and Gaethje over the weekend?
No.
Oh my God, it was crazy. So he had a, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but he had a broken foot, Khabib did, going into it. Mm-hmm. And a lightweight title with that magnitude, it's like, I don't want to say it was boring, because it wasn't boring, but it would have been so much better with the fans and just everyone going nuts. You know what I mean? Like, when Conor fought Khabib, that was unprecedented, with like Khabib jumping out of the fucking cage and going after Dylan Danis and shit. I mean, that was wild. I just think that, you know, and a lot of things too, man. Like, I see, you know, just all these promotions, you know, with especially in, you know, in Japan, I think that they have more of a respect of the art, because, you know, they're very quiet. Like, and a lot of people don't know this, like in the US, we're we want to go nuts. But in Japan, man, they're quiet. They're, you know, they respect the art, and it's you could hear a pin drop. You're just listening to the fighters breathe. You know, like I remember watching Nick Diaz over there, man, and you know, you could see him like cursing and shit and slapping people with the Stockton slap. And it was fun, man. It was a good time watching that. But for me, for my money, dude, I love the passion. I love the fans. And I don't know. I think like, does that give you some sort of, because you have to muster up, I guess, more so of your own energy in the sense to like hype you up, or like, do you rely more on the fans for that kind of energy? I guess it kind of depends for each fighter then, really.
Well, As a professional of anything, you should never need to get hyped up. This is just your job, and you should be already hyped up, you know, or motivated to fight and do what you need to do. But yeah, the fans, 100%, they give you, you know, it brings a certain amount of energy when you fight. So yes, that does help. But like I was saying, if you're a professional and you got to fight in an empty stadium, then you got to fight, you know. You should be able to adapt to whatever the circumstances are. You know, if you have to fight up in space on moon, figure it out. There's no gravity. Figure it out. You got to be able to fight. So it is what it is, you know.
Yeah, I love that shit. And that's great, too, because there's a lot of people out there that want to be fighters. They want to be this. They want to be that. But it's like anything in life, man. You know, if you have to wake up every morning and constantly be motivated, you know, I wouldn't say that you love that. I would think that, you know, you're still trying to look for that specific thing that someone's calling you to do, you know, whether it's being that business owner you've always wanted to be, or a fighter or anything. Like, I'm an entrepreneur. I was made partner with my business last year, right? And I don't need any fucking motivation. I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm just fired. I'm ready to go. Like, dude, some days I don't even sleep. I'm just so fired up. And that's not like because I'm stressed out or, you know, I have all this work to do. It's more so I just want to get after it. And I feel like that's the same with anything, with fighters. Like,
yeah, so you understand the mentality. And like you were saying, as far as motivation, I think it's bullshit, you know? I mean, motivation is going to last until you lace up the gloves and then you start working hard. And then all that motivation goes out the roof. Nothing's going to be able to motivate you to put in hard work. And I always tell people this when we discuss subjects like this. I don't like to train. In fact, I hate training. I like to train when it's like, you know, it's just fun and I don't have to go hard. But that's like, that rarely happens. When I'm training, I'm training to be in like fight shape, basically. And so when you think about it, who wants to put themselves at that upper level where you have to work 100% almost every single time, you know, or 90%, whatever the case may be? That's a lot of stress on your body. I don't want to do that on a daily basis, but I have to, because the end goal is to be more successful than I am now, gain more titles and whatever other goals someone may have. So anything in between that happens shouldn't matter. So even things that you know come along with the sport, such as pain, you know, I have pain all over my body, but none of that should matter, because the end goal is the only thing that matters. If I stop in between the middle parts where, you know, I have pain, I have stress, I have this to deal with, that to deal with, then I can't reach my goal at the end. So you have to be able to, you know, be strong-minded enough to overcome all those small obstacles in between.
Yeah, that's well said too. It's like anything in life, man. I think it's a bullshit argument where you need to pump yourself up. I completely understand that, you know. Yeah. But so you've been involved in ONE for what, a couple of years now, or I forget?
Yeah, about, I think, 2 or 3 years now.
Right. And I know that, you know, you have Demetrius Johnson, who came over to the UFC. I think you have, what's his name? Pretty Boy, Sage Northcutt. He's been in there. Yeah. Is it something where, you know, you would contemplate? Because I know with the UFC, they don't strictly have Muay Thai fights. They just have, it's just the mixed martial arts company. Mm-hmm. Would you ever consider hopping over to the UFC, you know, just like, because, dude, you got to think, you have a great following, you're a multiple-time world champion, and it's just something where you want to explore opportunities and, you know, other things, or you just want to, continue kicking ass in Muay Thai?
Yeah, it would just be Muay Thai, because I'm after perfection. As much as I know it doesn't exist, I'm still obsessed with that, and I'm still after perfecting my craft, what I do. And I believe in you know, being great at one thing. That's it. I mean, you can't choose and say, okay, I want to be great in this and I want to be great in this at the same time. I mean, it's not going to be possible. You have to dedicate yourself to one thing and one thing only. And that's, you know, I've gave up my whole life trying to perfect this craft, which is Muay Thai. Everything else is secondary in my life. And so for me to say, you know, I'm going to give up a lot of Muay Thai training to start learning the ground game and figuring things out. I mean, I would have to probably spend like minimum a year to get comfortable with being on the ground. I just don't, I, you know, it's too late for me to start something new, you know, right. When I'm already at a high level in Muay Thai, I have to keep continuing on to get even at a higher level, you know, because I'm not satisfied where I want to be in Muay Thai. So there's so many other things that I need to achieve in my sport before I can say, okay, I'm satisfied with what I've done in Muay Thai. Now I can play tennis. I can do something else. Yeah. But until that happens, and I'm sure that's never going to happen because I will never be satisfied with what I've achieved. There's always going to be something else that I invent in my mind to do.
Right.
You know, until that happens, I'm never gonna go on to something else.
Dude, I have so many of my friends who have the complete opposite mindset, where they're just like starting a new business, and then 6 months they're like, you know, oh, I want to be fucking rock climber or some shit. It's like, dude, stick with one thing, make that thing work, and then go on to the next. You know,
right?
I think it's this like short term gratification thing that more so my generation is, because I'm only 23, right? So I think, you know, just getting out of college, a lot of people think, oh, we need to have the world figured out. But it's like, motherfucker, you're only 22, 23. Like, you need to do shit first. You need to have things actually physically in place and have experiences. Like, dude, something that I'll tell you, which is, you know, you're in Jersey. So have you ever been down, like, to South Street, I guess, in Philly?
Yeah.
Yeah. So my dad had a bar there, right, called the Boiler Room, right? And like it's right near Jim Steaks, and it's not there anymore, unfortunately, right? But dude, I was there, you know, 15, 16 years old. I went to Roman Catholic High School, right? So I would come down there when I was like 15, 16, 17, and I would just bartend. It'd be like 6, you know, I'd get there probably around 3 o'clock, and I'd bartend to like 6. And dude, you meet a cast of characters out there, heroin addicts, people that are millionaires. Like there's so many high, like from the social status, like there's so many people that you meet. And I think that's so important, like really be not necessarily a people person, but just like understand other people's mindsets on shit. Because like when you're in college, you get fed this bullshit notion of like, oh, you're going to have it figured out. Like it's all sunshine and rainbows. But it's like, dude, you're going to get a hit with a fucking head kick to the face of life. And you're going to understand really quick. That's not how it works. You know, it's so funny how that works.
Going back to what you were saying with your friends. And not just your friends, but like you were saying, many people have this issue where they're, you know, starting one thing, then they go on to the next, and then another thing. And I think it all comes back to the base. The core of the problem is not knowing, not being in love with what you're doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. I mean, for me, Muay Thai, that's it for me. I'm obsessed with that. That's my love. That's the only thing that I care about. And so, you know, like I was saying, with the motivation, I don't need motivation because I love what I do. So that end goal gets me to wake up and train on a daily basis. Now, and I think I figured this out when I was in high school. I remember going from high school into college, and I was also involved in art as well. And I loved art as well. And so I was doing graphic design, but I truly wanted to be an oil painter. But then I started asking myself, how hard do I want to work to be the best oil painter? There's so much competition out there, and I just didn't care enough about it to put that amount of work in. So that, you know, that gave me the answer right there. I just wasn't in love with oil painting as much as I wanted to do something like graphic design. And in graphic design, there's a lot more money to come by where there is an oil painting, even though, you know, that's what I initially wanted to do. So it's just about finding what you want to do. Now, how do you find what you want to do? I have no idea, man. That's the hard part. And I've met a lot of people. Hey, you still on?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. That was so weird.
Is it still recording?
Yeah, it's still recording. I'm so sorry, dude. All
right, maybe picking up what I was saying. So I'll just continue on. So I was saying maybe something that challenges you will help you have that, keep that focus.
Right. It's so true. I mean, you know, I think – so when you're done this – are you going to be like, what do you want to do? Is it something where you just like want to sit back and retire and just like do tennis, or do you want to like be involved in the game as much as possible and just like coach it?
I don't know about coaching, because for me, I want to do everything at the highest level. If I can't do something at the highest level, I'm not interested at all. And so to find somebody and to invest time into somebody, maybe that's young. Let's say he's 15 years old, and I invest all time into a certain person, a kid that's doing well, and he's showing a lot of potential in the sport. And then maybe, you know, at like 23, 24 years old, he or she decides, this isn't for me. They get a girlfriend, they get a boyfriend, they go into another lane, and now I just lost all that time. So yeah. I can't control anybody. You know, I can only control myself. So me, as far as being a coach to somebody, I don't know if that's going to be feasible, you know. Opening up my own school, I don't know, maybe. I don't have any aspirations to do that, but who knows. Maybe I would do that. I would continue my personal training, the seminars that I do, and like you were saying, possibly even retire. I'm trying to do things that are smart financially now, so I can set myself up when I'm in my 40s to not worry, you know, financially where the money's coming from.
Yeah, that's a good move too. Because I know that, you know, and you probably know more than I do, man, a lot of fighters don't have that mentality where they don't have that exit strategy. You know, you look at the Michael Bispins of the world, the George St. Pierres, where, sure, they were great fighters, Hall of Famers in the UFC, man. But they had, you know, Bispin with the commentating, Daniel Cormier with the commentating, GSP with, you know, he's doing something in Montreal. Like, he's always, I think he's on a TV show there. So they have these other personalities that I think it's really advantageous. And I mean, dude, you're in Jersey. So the real estate market right now, it's as hot as it's ever been. So it'd be a good time to get some properties. I was actually just talking to someone before our call about this. It's never been a better time to buy real estate, man. And especially for, and here's the thing too. I think that for professional fighters, I think you guys should qualify for some sort of a loan, in the sense where if you have other citizenship, you should be able to, I don't know, I'm just like spitballing here, but I think kind of like how a vet has their specific loan, how a doctor has their specific loan. I think that a fighter because how much of a, you know, volatile career it is, whether you're extremely successful and then you're, you know, someone who is just, you know, kind of lackluster, it's like you need that protection. I really think it's crucial, you know. And the same thing with our firefighters too. I think that, you know, I think that they're, and I'm already sure there's a loan for that, you know, but I think that I just want to protect you guys as much as possible, because it's a hard sport, man. It's I think, you know, Muay Thai, just martial arts in general, is the most beautiful thing ever. I think it's as beautiful as like Picasso painting or Michelangelo, like sculpting some statue. You know what I mean? That's how I think of it. And not many people really see it that way. You know, a lot of people like, dude, my girlfriend right now, she goes, oh my God, like you hate, yeah, like it's all about the violence. It's all about the blood and gore. That's secondary. You know, that's secondary. Sure, I like to see someone get, you know, head kick or a nice, you know, spinning back fist, you know, to the mitt. But it's like that, the way you can contort your body and all these techniques and shit, man, it's beautiful. But more importantly, I really, for me, this is something that I'm like fascinated in, is like, who did you look up to? Like when you were first thinking, oh, I want to do Muay Thai. I want to be a professional fighter. I want to just start kicking ass and taking names. Like, did you have someone who you really idolized growing up that you're like, fuck, man, if I could be like him, like even the 10th, that would be it?
Yeah, I started in 2005, and that's right when Buakaw started fighting K1 around 2004, 2005, 2006. That's when he was at his best, and that's like one of the first guys that I saw, and he stood out because he was so calm in the way he fought. His technique was completely different than the rest of the kickboxers. So he was the one that I looked up to a lot. And he was the one that helped me learn how to get a better left kick. I just copied exactly how he was kicking with his left kick, how he used his teeps. And that really helped me in my career as an amateur. And it helped me stand out too.
Yeah.
And alongside with him, I would watch a lot of fights from Lumpini Stadium. There was this one Thai grocery that was around the area, and I would just go over there, and they would have like a wall full of cassette tapes.
Okay.
And my coach told me about the place, and he said, you know, you can just walk in there and buy fights that they have, and they record them like, you know, regularly. So I just started buying those, and I would watch every single day. I would watch fights from Lumpini Stadium, and you know, just watching different styles. That helped me out a lot. But Buakaw was definitely one of the first guys that I was looking up to, and just copying his moves and following along what he was doing.
Dude, that's awesome. Imagine like your girlfriend at the time, like you come home with all these tapes, and she thinks it's like porno tapes or shit like that. She's like, what the fuck are you doing? Come on, man. What the fuck is this? Like, no. I'm just training. I'm learning. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's funny. Yeah, I've watched both of them, man. And that's the great thing with cassette tapes is I just like that old style. I like, just really replaying the greatest moments in martial arts, because it's so young. It's so fucking young. And people think it has been around for thousands of years, but it hasn't been popularized right now, where, dude, pretty soon it's going to be, you know, I think right up there with soccer as, you know, the most popular sport in the world. It's just, it's humane. I mean, I think it's meant to be, you know what I mean? But yeah, I think it's definitely, maybe take like 10, 15 years, but it'll happen. It'll happen eventually. But, dude, and then something else too is like your day to day, like when you're training for a fight, because you're in featherweight. So when you're, you know, I guess walk me through like, you know, with you're just getting into camp, and then I guess like when you're cutting, you know, maybe like a week or like, I don't even know your schedule. Just like walk me through like your entire timeline of like you leading up to a fight, training, diet, you know, meditation, all that shit.
Yeah, well, it depends. For one championship, I don't cut any weight. Usually, I'm about 2 pounds under the weight class. So, but that's the weight class that I'm in now. But I have to go down in a lower weight class for that reason. Mm-hmm. When I'm fighting, like let's say Lumpini Stadium or a fight that's international, international fights, you have to weigh in the day. So you get 24 hours, sometimes even more than 24 hours to recuperate. For Lumpini Stadium or, any big stadium in Thailand, Rajlanan Stadium, you weigh in the day of. So in the morning, you weigh in at 7 a.m. and then the fight starts around 6. So it depends where you are on the card. You can fight at 6 or, you know, 7, 8, 9, up to 10 p.m. And the strategy is going to be different, you know, for both of those, both ways that you cut weight. So the day before the fight, you can cut all your weight on that day, and it's generally speaking for me and most of the Muay Thai fighters, we cut up to about 10 pounds of water weight. So the day before, you can pretty much just cut everything in a jacuzzi. That's how I usually like to do it, because you can submerge yourself up to the neck. So you're sweating that water weight out, but you can still breathe fresh air. In a sauna, it's a lot harder to breathe. So you're making it more difficult for yourself than you need to. So I usually do 5 minutes, or no, I'm sorry, 10 minutes in the jacuzzi and then 5 minutes out. 10 minutes in, 5 minutes out. It's very important that you take breaks in between those 5 minutes, because if not, things can go wrong. within your body. So you have to take those breaks. And usually I can cut 10 pounds within about, I would say about 3 hours, sometimes maybe even sooner. Mm-hmm. Then when I'm fighting for in Thailand at the big stadiums, that's a whole different procedure. With that, we start cutting weight about 2 to 3 days before the fight. So
damn.
Yeah. So it's more of a gradual system, because you have to have your body get used to the new weight that you're at without having the water. You can't just do it all in one shot, because you're not going to be able to recuperate everything for the fight at the night.
Sure.
So we start about 2 or 3 days before. We just do jogging, shadow boxing, just light stuff. And it's all with the sauna suit on, and you do it outside because it's always hot. And you do a morning, evening, and then obviously that fight day, you go to the venue, you weigh in, and that's it. You try to intake as much water back into your system as you possibly can before the fight. And I've always felt good when I fought at Lumpini Stadium, and I'm still cutting about 7 to 8 pounds of water weight, and that's a day of the fight. So it's not that bad.
I was gonna say 10 pounds is not bad at all. You know, I know a lot of people, like my one friend, dude, I'd love you to set you up with one of my good friends, Ty Switcherowski. He's primarily in boxing, but he trains, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, all that stuff. So you guys should definitely connect. And I think he cuts, and Tyler can tell you better than I could, but I think he cuts a lot more. And he's huge. I mean, he's like, I think he might be your height. And he's just, I think, 180, 190 maybe. And he needs to cut down to like 170, 65. I could be butchering this. So, but he cuts a lot more than you do. And I think it's so tough. I mean, you got to think what you just said, when you're in Thailand, that 2 to 3 days of you cutting, because you have to be more prepared, I guess, like in the sense of you're already tapering off, that amount of water weight before, you hit that 2 to 3 days. Because it's like, if you try to do it all in one, like you said, I mean, it's going to be catastrophic. It's not going to be a good day at the office, that's for sure. But
yeah, I know the guys in MMA and mainly MMA, they cut a lot more weight. They cut like 25 pounds of water weight. And I don't know how they do it, but those guys are really good with the science behind that. Because I think most of them come from the wrestling background, and wrestlers, again, have mm-hmm. to cut a lot of so they have that down perfectly. And actually, the guy that taught me how to cut weight, with the jacuzzi. Used to fight in UFC, and he was a wrestler, so he taught me how to do that. And I don't follow exactly the way he does it, but I followed enough where it definitely helped me out.
Nice. What's his name?
Rich Attenito.
Rich Attenito. That rings a bell. I thought you were gonna say Rick Story for a second. I was like, oh my god, I remember that. I think he's still fighting. Fight
a long time ago.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome, man. Yeah, I mean, I would love to learn more, because I'm primarily training jiu-jitsu right now. I'm in Balance Studios in Fishtown, so with the Miglerice brothers. Are you familiar with them? You know them?
No.
They're in they actually have a crazy story, man, where they were in – I think they were – those two brothers were some of the first black belts in America, where they came over. They were literally taught from the Gracies themselves. And they came over to Philly, made their mark. I forget the year they started Balance, but, dude, they were literally the first. I think Phil and Ricardo, the two brothers, they have, like, their seventh degree black belts. I could be wrong, but they're high, man. They're crazy. And the best part about it is, I'll tell you the story. One of the first Muay Thai sessions I ever had, right, was with Phil. Now, Phil and I, we were going to do business, right? So he was talking to me. He was like, want me to throw combinations and knees and shit. But he was trying to talk to me about business too, right? So you got to think, this is my first Muay Thai session. I'm like, oh, we're just going to go easy, just like working the fundamentals. Dude, this guy was kicking my ass. And he was like, you know, throwing back, right? So I have to block. And shit. And then he's trying to talk to me about business while we're training, right? I'm like, dude, I can't do this right now. Like, it's two sides of my head. Like, what do you mean? He was busting my balls, of course, but it was fun, man. I mean, you definitely got to connect with them. They're awesome. They're boatloads of fun. And I just think it's the culture is a lot more different because, like, when I was in college, like 2 years ago, dude, I remember I was training jiu-jitsu with this one sensei who he was a purple belt, you know, knew his stuff, but he would let us roll willy-nilly, like just full-out roll. Like, and we didn't know anything. So I remember this one kid, he went for a knee bar. And he tore off the other guy's, I think it was just like MCL or something. He just ripped it apart. Cool. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, and this kid, he was, you know, like an engineering major. He was just thought like he was having a casual workout. But this guy was, this guy was just a fucking savage, ripped his whole knee off.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Well, yeah, that's why I try to stay away from jiu-jitsu too, because I see a lot of my friends just have so many injuries with their basically all the joints, you know, their elbows, their knees, and it's all from things like that. You know, you get somebody that doesn't have control, or who knows, maybe their ego's in the way and they want to do damage, and you know, you get hurt.
Dude, I know, it's so brutal. It's so fucking brutal. So dude, the last thing I wanted to talk to you about is I know that you have your own training course called the website's topicfight.com. And yeah. So once you start this up, because I know earlier you were talking about like, oh, you don't know if you're going to be, you know, a coach, but you have all these wonderful training seminars. So I, you know, I guess when did you start that?
Well, I started in, I think 2015. Yeah. 2015, mm-hmm. 2016. And it really wasn't me. It was my coach that started telling me that I should start doing private training and start doing seminars, because for me, I just kept saying like, who the fuck am I to be able to teach somebody, you know? But there was a lot of people that wanted to learn from me and wanted to learn my style of fighting. And I am very cerebral when it comes to the sport, and I break everything down and I try to systemize things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he told me you should start doing this. And I said, okay, you know what? Fuck it. I got to make money, because that's when I quit my graphic design job when I was in 2014. And I came back from Thailand in 2015, 2016. I had to start figuring out how I'm going to make money. So I had to do something. So, you know, that's when I started doing the seminars and the personal training. And it took off. And now that's one of the ways that I make income.
Yeah, that's awesome. With the whole social media aspect now, it's like you can do so much, man. I know fighters that, you know, they have their own podcast now, they have this, they have that, merchandise. Fucking McGregor's got his own whiskey now, so it's like there's so many different things you can do, man. It's just all about being creative, you know? Like, you know, Dose Brack, the artist out in Ireland, familiar with him?
What's his name?
His artist name is Dose Brack, DOSBRAK.
No, I haven't heard of him.
Dude, you would fucking love him because he paints oil, and he has, like, I'll show you something real quick. It's, so Habib fought last week, and I don't know if you can see this, but this is one of the paintings he did. It's called Deep Water, where I don't know if you can see it, but.
Oh, I did see it.
Yeah. Dude, it's fucking sick, man. And it's a bargain. It's only like $300. Like, I thought this was easily going to go for a couple of G's, but fuck it. Listen, when I get my first property, this is going to be the second purchase I make, dude.
Yeah.
Sick. But I think that the fighter's mentality overall is a beautiful one, because you don't want to get too high and too low. And you're a humble man yourself, and I respect that. I think that, you know, someone with an ego problem like myself, when I first got into martial arts, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to fucking, you know. And again, I'm not like a crazy big guy. I'm only 5'10", like maybe, you know, 170 pounds, like nothing crazy. But I was like, oh, I'm going to steamroll these fucking guys. And, next thing I know, I'm getting choked out by some guy who's like 15. You know, like I said, I'm 23. So it's a very humbling experience. I think that more people could, you know, definitely learn.
Don't get me wrong. You have an ego, and it's a big ego, but you have to be able to control it. And that's, you know, that's the problem. I think a lot of people who don't get up at a higher level are people who do have the ego, but aren't able to control it. And maybe it makes them quit. You know, they're not able to suppress what needs to be suppressed, and you know, things don't go the way they go. But every single fighter has an ego, and it's a huge ego, believe me. Especially at a high level, the highest level guys have the biggest egos, and if you don't have a big ego, you're never gonna get up there. But you have to be able to control it. Everything has to be controlled, just like, you know, fear. We all have fear. And then, you know, especially fighters, anybody who's in combat is going to have fear. But it's not about having fear. Yeah, we know we all have fear. It's about who's going to be able to control it, so you can fight under pressure and perform under pressure. Right. And so that's the difference between, like, let's say somebody at a low level and somebody at a high level. We all have the same emotions and fears, but it's just who's able to control it. Uncontrolled fear is a useless emotion. Controlled fear is a useful emotion. So that's the only difference.
That's beautiful. I like the way you put that too, because sure, there's a million different emotions that you could be feeling, you know, during a fight. You could have someone who, oh, I'm going to dust this guy off the mat, you know, I'm going to get him out of there in the first couple of minutes. And then you have someone else where it's like, oh, I might be a little more anxious because this guy, you know, pretty solid record. He's got some pretty nice experience under his belt. The guys he's fought, the competition and all that stuff with his repertoire. So you have to take him a little more serious. But it's all, you know, I think life in general is more gray. And a lot of people try to make it, like myself, I once said, I thought it was more black and white, but it's more gray, where you have to be, and this is like, you know, what Bruce Lee said, right? Like, you have to be like water. You have to adapt to a certain situation. And every situation is going to be different. You know, you're not going to face similar. Sure, you might face similar situations that you've already overcome in your head, which you're already prepared for. But the situations that you haven't prepared for yet, you need to be open to, you know, fluctuating certain emotions and controlling them, like you said, because, you know, and look, you don't have to look past, what's a good example? I mean, not saying Paulo Costa, you know, he was, you know, egotistical against Adesanya, right? When they fought, you know, a couple months ago, but he was probably like, man, like, you know, this is a really, you know, powerful guy. He's undefeated. I mean, you know, Adesanya is undefeated, and Costa was like, man, you know, I think we can get him out of there in the first couple rounds. And then when he saw he didn't, you know, and he has that big adrenaline rush, and it just crashed the second round. You know, the first round, he was like a bull in a china shop, right? The second one, he was like, you know, he looked like not that he didn't want to be in there. I don't want to say that. I don't want to disrespect him, but he's like, shit, man. Like he knew he was up against one of the best in the world. And it's like, fuck, I'm really going to have to raise this game. So that's a good point. That's a really good point, man. For sure. Yeah. But listen, man, this was an absolute pleasure. I know that, you know, when COVID opens up and whenever, I definitely want to pop in Jersey, and you're more than welcome to come to Philly and kick my ass, teach me a couple things whenever, man. But dude, thank you so much for being on, and it was an absolute pleasure, man.
You got it, bro. Good talk.
Yeah. We'll talk soon, man. Thank you. Cool. Mr. Topic, ladies and gentlemen. Bye.